Hello, you're listening to the Seeds Out of Movies. My name's Colin. I'm the C. Joining me is Zijan the Zed. Hello, Zijan.
Hey, Colin. Welcome back from holiday. How was it?
Thank you. It was lovely. I went down to Devon near Exeter and had a lovely old time in the, relaxing in the Devonshire countryside.
Is that where you have scones or scones or whatever you pronounce it?
Yes, you have scones. Well, the big thing about scones in the southwest of England is you have them in Cornwall and Devon, but they differ as to whether you put cream then jam or put jam then cream.
Why is this a thing?
We've got to make our own amusement in this country, particularly in the rural southwest. I'll tell you what, I'm a fence sitter. Quite often I will have cream then jam on one scone and jam then cream on the other scone.
Like does it matter? Like, okay, for me, I'll put cream first and then jam. Because it's easier to put jam on cream than it is to put cream on jam. That's how you think.
Yeah, if I had to choose one, I'd go the same way. I'm told it's also a little bit of how you view scones. Because if you view it like an equivalent to a sandwich or something, you'll put butter then jam. So that is cream then jam. It's a bit like a sandwich. If you regard it as being like a dessert, you'll put like the fruit and then you put the cream on top. So clearly we regard scones as being more like a sandwich than a dessert.
You guys need more exciting things in your life, man.
I mean, I'll be honest, I don't feel that strong either way, but they do down in Devon, it turns out. They also have strong feelings about where the crimp goes on the pasty, I think, but that's a...
Well, I mean, the outside, right?
Where else? Yeah, it's definitely the outside. But it's like, is it over the top or is it around the side?
Wow. Mm. You guys really know how to pick your battles.
Yeah. Well, they're not any... I seem to remember the Malaysians in general got very excited about whether or not rendang was crispy. Maybe that's the equivalent.
Well, no.
No?
Like, that's us against the world, whereas this is you guys against yourself, like a civil war. I don't even know why.
I mean, if you're in Cornwall, then Devon is basically a foreign land. I don't know. I'm not going to apologise to our Cornish listeners if we have any, because I think they'll be proud of that. I think they'll be happy with that state of affairs. Yeah. Today we are ranking the top 10 films beginning with the letter J. We've got the J in the alphabet. Some people might have noticed we've never covered A or B.
Have we not?
Maybe that's because it's the C to Z of movies. I don't think that's deliberate, but maybe let's pretend it was. We're also hopefully talking about All Quiet on the Western Front, but not the one you think. We've got a quiz on the Sing movies.
If we get there, honestly.
And much, 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 much more.
It's a lot to wade through this week, guys.
This is news central this last couple of weeks, isn't it?
It's like they've taken the past, like three podcasts, so 6 weeks of news, and crammed it into this one.
Yeah, I've ignored a lot of stuff that I would normally be kind of saying, putting front and centre, because there's some big stuff happening.
Yeah, I think the biggest one is basically James Gunn has unveiled DCU's, I sigh when I say the DCU, but the DC Cinematic Universe template, basically.
Yeah, so Gunn is the DCEU, which I'm not sure ever was officially called that, DC Extended Universe, and now we have the DCU. Is it the DC Universe or just the C acting for both comics and cinematic? Who knows?
Maybe that's why they're going wrong so far. That's why the MCU succeeded when they didn't.
Yeah.
It's one letter shot.
Maybe that's what it is. I mean, DC stands for Detective Comics, right?
Yeah.
So is it the Detective Cinematic Universe? Is that what we're getting here? Who knows?
But anyway, the movie slate that's coming up, and there are quite a few movie slates. I may get lost here because, you know, some of them are definitely TV series and some of them may be video games. Yeah. But I'm pretty certain that the first movie that's supposed to kick off this new DC universe, which is named Gods and Monsters Universe, is a Superman film.
Yeah, I think Gods and Monsters is this phase of it rather than the universe in general. I think it's a kind of... Like Marvel have phase one, phase two, whereas I think DC are just naming their phases.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Be different. Superman Legacy.
Superman Legacy, which does not star Henry Cavill.
No, we've been very... He's already said that it was going to be a younger Superman. He's going to start fresh. James Gunn's writing, maybe directing, not confirmed yet.
Hopefully a more hopeful, more cheery Superman.
Yeah, he may not even break anyone's neck in this one.
Oh, you hope so, because looking at the rest of the slate, they all sound extremely depressing. Like, they basically went through all the comic books that each of the characters have, and they chose the darkest version of each of them. It's because up next is The Authority, which is a team of superheroes. Again, you're going to ask me who are the Authority, Colin.
I'm absolutely itching to ask you that.
Yeah, no, because I didn't look it up very clearly, but they are characters from Wildstorm Comics imprint that DC bought, which they are a team of superheroes who are... I wrote this down, but I didn't. So they're a team of superheroes, full stop. That's where I'm ending my description of that. Yes.
This superhero movie is about a team. It's about a team of superheroes. Incredible. Are they some sort of like police type thing, authority, detectives? Who knows? I did have a quick look, but I thought, no, it's easy, I'll have this covered.
Yeah, well, I'll let you know next podcast. We are running out of time, guys. Move on. after that, we have the next Batman film.
Just quickly say, Authority is a team of superheroes who get the job done by any means necessary. That'll do. We can find out more later. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. After that, the Batman film, which is not to be confused with the Robert Pattinson Batman movies or the Joaquin Phoenix Joker films, because this is a separate universe altogether.
It's also not the other two Batman that are currently in the universe, which is Ben Affleck and Michael Keaton. This is a brand new Batman.
Who has a child in this one. He has Damian Wayans, the new Robin, basically. So this is going to take this is Colin McCord, the brave and the bold.
Yeah, it's yet another Batman, but a different... We haven't had a proper Robin on film since George Clooney's iteration with
Chris O'Donnell, yeah. But we have Teen Titans Go to the movies, which counts.
Yeah, of course we have them. Joseph Gordon-Levitt was kind of Robin-ish at the end of Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, that's true.
In the Zack Snyderverse, there was a Robin, but he was killed before the start. Interesting to start with Damian Wayne. I think if people in general know Robin, they know Dick Grayson Robin, don't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean,
there have been so many Robins throughout the ages.
Yeah, Jason Todd. Carrie something or other. Mm-hmm. The other one.
Tim Drake,
of course. But to have him as the actual son, I guess it makes it much more acceptable to just have a kid hanging around.
Rather than recruit an orphan and
who's Damian Wayne's mother normally?
Ra's al Ghul's daughter.
So. Oh, Talia al Ghul.
Talia al Ghul, yeah.
As played by Marion Cotillard in Dark Knight Rises. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they couldn't help themselves from doing another Batman.
Of course not, right? I mean,
but at least it's a fresh take, and it's nice to have the Bat family. Do you reckon we're going to get more Bat family folk?
Yeah, well, it would be nice to expand the Bat universe. I would say it would be nice to see. Well, now the whole defunct Batgirl is not happening anymore. It would be nice to see a version of Batgirl.
Yeah, somewhere. Yeah. I mean, they might even bring her back. Leslie.
So after that, and we're talking about more darker films as well. Supergirl. There's going to be a Supergirl film, but this is supposed to be based on a comic run which features a darker, harsher, because of course they have to do it like that, version of Kara Zor-El, who's raised on a surviving chunk of Krypton, who sees everyone around her dies.
Yeah, so Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. We've had Supergirl. There is a Supergirl movie. Apparently, I have seen it many, many, many years ago. Apparently, it's terrible. I was too young to really remember. For those who don't know, Supergirl is generally older when she arrives on Earth. Mm. So she arrives when she's what, teenager, maybe?
Yeah, she was a teenager, but then Clark Kent grew up by then. Really,
because of
she's
time
basically
and stuff.
The older cousin of Clark, technically.
Yes, but younger on Earth.
But younger enough, yeah.
Yeah, James Gunn mentioned this run based on Tom King and Bilquis Evely, and it immediately went to the top of the bestseller charts for comics because everyone ran to find out what it was about. There is going to be a Supergirl in The Flash, isn't there?
Oh, is there? I keep forgetting that.
I think she's in the trailer. By the time people listen to this, in fact, the Super Bowl trailers will all be out, including the new Flash trailer, so you might know more than us, but we haven't seen that yet. No word as to whether that's going to be the same actor It'd be a shame if it is just one and done, kind of in a supporting role, but you wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Well, I did like Melissa Benoist in the CW Supergirl series.
I used to call her Benoist. I think she's actually Benoist.
Oh, really? she's not French.
Benoist's nicer, though, isn't it? Yeah, I think she's a fantastic Supergirl. I must admit, I've not been watching that series for years
for
now.
A while
But yeah, I thought she was really good in that.
Yeah. I mean, I've given you a DVD back, right, Colin?
You have. Okay, long-time listeners will have been tracking the... The DVD on Zijan book when we were teenagers, and he's finally returned it to me.
Oh, am I the reason why you haven't been watching Supergirl?
That's it. So it'll be nice to see that done well on the big screen.
Yeah, but again, I'm still not looking forward to all these dark versions of everything.
Yeah, I don't think they'll fall into the Snyder trap of let's just make it grey and gloomy. I don't think they will.
And then the last film that's been announced is a horror film-ish of Swamp Thing. So this is going to be an origin story for the creature, one that intersects with the rest of the DCU. There's another bit of news that came out later that James Mangold of Logan fame has hinted at directing. Mm. So,
I mean, Swamp Thing's not a character I know much about. There was a TV series that got fairly quickly cancelled recently. James Mangold's great. I'd forgotten if I ever knew that he was doing a Bob Dylan biopic, so he's going to get that out of the way first, maybe.
Yeah.
There's also, as you've mentioned, a lot of TV stuff, a few games, things. The idea is it's one constant universe, so the TV and the film and the games are all the same actors. We're not covering TV stuff here, but they've got a big old plan. He's also said that the things like Joker 2, as you mentioned, Batman 2, and Teen Titans Go, I think, were the three things he mentioned that are Elseworlds, which is a concept from the comics where it's happening somewhere else, you don't need to worry about it. Which is, I'm really glad they're not roping Robert Pattinson into this. I think that works better as a separate thing.
I think so too. I agree with that. Yeah.
And this year's films are all still happening. Blue Beetle, allegedly happening. That Aquaman sequel that may have Ben Affleck or maybe Michael Keaton or maybe someone else.
Shazam, still happening.
Still happening. Shazam 2 is still happening. And of course, Flash is rebooting the entire universe, presumably to the DCU, but then Aquaman comes out afterwards, so who knows?
Who knows?
Good luck to him, I say.
I know. Oh, anyway, that's the run of the news for DC. So speaking of James Mangold, anyway, him directing the Bob Dylan biopic with Timothée Chalamet, there is going to be a musical based on, and this is a jukebox musical, so it has all the songs from Bob Dylan.
All the songs from Bob Dylan.
All of it.
Every single one.
As much as they get crammed in 2 hours. Girl from the North Country. So it's headed to a big screen and they've done some casting. Woody Harrelson is going to be in it. Olivia Colman is going to be in it. Chloe Bailey, who is apparently the sister of the Little Mermaid, Halle Berry, Halle Bailey, is also going to be in it as well.
Yeah, I saw this on stage in London with my brother.
And?
A few years back. It's really good. It's really good. I think when you hear jukebox musical, you kind of think, oh, a lot of them are quite lazy, just like knock together whatever plot.
Yes.
But this was really not. It's set in a boarding house. It's quite enigmatic. The songs they've chosen aren't necessarily the big hits of Bob Dylan. I mean, I recognise more or less all of them, but I'm quite a big Dylan fan. But it spans his 60-year career, and they've got some recent stuff as well as some of the classics. So yeah, I think this is good news. I don't know whether Olivia Colman or Woody Harrelson have sung on film before.
No, which characters would they play then, Colin? And would they be singing as well? Because like as I say, when Michelle Yeoh is going to play Madame Morrible, it's not going to be a singing party in Wicked.
Right. So. I think they're all singing parts from when I saw it, and yeah, it's not so it's certainly not a biopic or anything like that. It's just Bob Dylan is not a character. I can't remember the names of any of the characters, to be honest, but I think Olivia Colman's character probably would be the person running the guest house, and Woody Harrelson would be someone who comes through, but it's basically just a lot of different people coming through the guest house and you see bits of their lives.
I mean,
there's no reason to believe they can't sing. Woody Harrelson, I feel, is in a band or something. Feels like something he would do. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Cool.
Another one I'm looking forward to is it's a body swap comedy. I just looked at Woody Harrelson was in a band called Manly Moondog and the Three Cool Cats.
I mean, it sounds like a band that Woody Harrelson will be in, right?
I wonder if he remembers that. Anyway, we're getting a body swap comedy. It's starring Julia Roberts and Jennifer Aniston, who are going to swap bodies. Directed by Max Barbakov, or Barbacol, who was the man behind Palm Springs.
I like Palm Springs a lot.
Palm Springs is great. Yeah,
it's a great film. But body swap comedies tend to put two people with very different experiences, and you know, and pull out lots of fun from that. You know, like Freaky Friday, where the mother and daughter has swapped bodies,
for example.
Jennifer Aniston and Julia Roberts
feel quite similar.
Are not too different.
Yeah, I mean, this feels more like a kind of Jason Bateman, Ryan Reynolds, what was it called, The Switch Up or something, or which I didn't get through. John's terrible film, where one of them is the wild, crazy guy, one of them's the sedate, boring guy. So I imagine it might be something like this. But then, I mean, say, Palm Springs was great, and that was the time loop romantic comedy has been done to death. So I have some hope you can do something a bit original with it.
Yeah, should be good. Speaking of Palm Springs as well, Andy Samberg is starring in a rom-com called 42.6 Years from Cruella director Craig Gillespie. So he's going to play a young man who, in order to save his life, undergoes, he became cryogenically frozen. And he wakes up, as you guess it, 42.6 years later.
Yes, Jean Smart will be playing his girlfriend. Who is definitely not 42.6 years older than Andy Samberg, but there you go. I suppose maybe miracle cures in the future. I like Craig Gillespie. I think he's done some great stuff. As you say, Crowley did I, Tonya. Oh. So, yeah, this could be a fun one.
Yeah, it could be fun.
42.6 years. Interesting.
Very specific.
Are you in the mood, Zijan, for some sequels?
There are quite a few of them.
Here are five sequels that are going to happen.
Go on,
then. Here we go. Toy Story 5. It's back once more. I like Toy Story 4, but they do not need to keep making these.
No. I love Toy Story 3. They should stop there.
I did see someone's pitch for Toy Story 5, though, online, which was quite good. But basically, jump forward a few decades and have Andy be old.
That's the problem, right? Like, I mean, so long as they keep making money, they won't stop making Toy Story films.
It's true. Frozen 3 is happening. What a surprise.
I like the first Frozen, and that's it.
I got halfway through Frozen 2 and gave up. Zootopia 2 or Zootropolis 2, depending on which region you're in.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first one. The first one was pretty good.
Is there a series off the back of this?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Fine. I think there is. And there's no way we can find out. Zootropolis series. Here we go. There is a Zootopia TV series.
Ha! Huh.
It's on Disney Plus, I think.
Oh, is that how you found it?
Yeah, I've not watched it, but I would have been more confident there was one if I had watched it. So Disney's putting all those out. Fine. Who says that they've run out of ideas? Creed 4 is definitely happening, Michael B. Jordan says. Which is confident, considering that Creed 3 hasn't even hit cinema yet.
Well, I mean, he's directing the whole thing, right? Creed 3.
And
I mean, this is a good way of guaranteeing himself a job as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Michael B. Jordan is worried about work, is he?
No, I don't think so.
Maybe he is. I'll watch it. Bad Boys 4 is happening. I won't be watching that. Adil and Bilal, apparently the people who directed the third one, I think, and are back for the fourth one. They also, I think, were the people behind the cancelled Batwoman movie. So,
Batgirl.
Sorry, Batgirl. So if in doubt, go back to the franchise that no one liked before.
I mean, the directors are Miss Marvel episodes as well. So
yeah, I didn't see whether they directed the good ones or the bad ones. there you go. Those are all
you
the
missed
sequels.
That one sequel, Colin.
Did I?
Yeah.
What did I miss?
I know what you did last summer.
Oh, I did miss that. That was my next piece of news, but I put it as a separate one because I was so excited.
Of course you are.
Jennifer Love Hewitt, Freddie Prinze Jr. They're back. It's the 90s all over again.
Did they survive that? I
don't know, but they're probably going to star in it.
So I guess they're back.
I watched a Freddie Prinze Jr. film only yesterday.
Oh, did you? Is this Scooby-Doo?
No, it was Down to You.
Ah.
The year 2000. It was a rom-com with Julia Stiles and I thought it was pretty good, and it got 3% on Rotten Tomatoes.
They clearly do not know what they're talking about there.
It was sweet. Anyway, neither of them are getting lots of work at the moment, I would say. So you can understand this. Freddie Prinze Jr. really didn't come back for He's All That.
That's true.
He can't have been too busy for He's All That, can he?
Well, I don't know what he's up to nowadays. I just saw what Sarah Michelle Gellar, his wife, on the Graham Norton show recently. So.
Oh, yeah, she's doing something.
She's doing stuff.
So. Yeah. She came back for... I know it wasn't come back. She was in Do Revenge, in fact, which this film... Oh, sorry, that was directed by Jennifer Caton Robinson, who might be directing this one.
Oh. Nice. Okay. How much more time do you have? Okay, Disney Splash remake is moving ahead. We've now got a new screenwriter for it. At one point in time, I think Channing Tatum was going to be in it, in a role reversal kind of thing. In original Splash, we had, was it Daryl Hannah?
Daryl Hannah.
And Tom Hanks, where Daryl Hannah played a mermaid. Does her tail turn into legs on land if she gets dry?
Yes, I think so.
Oh,
okay. I have seen this. I think I'm pretty sure that's right, yeah.
This is supposed to be a role reversal film where Channing Tatum is going to play the merman, basically. But, well, who knows who's going to replace him. But I hear Jillian Bell, who's taking over the Tom Hanks role, is still in talks for this. So there you go.
I feel like she's been a mermaid in something. I can't substantiate that. and I'm not going to look it up. I'll tell you what's not happening. Apparently, Marvel have no plans for a Young Avengers movie. Do you believe that?
No.
Steve Broussard, who is a director, producer of quite a lot of stuff, including the Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania film that is coming out imminently, has said this, maybe just in response to a question, I guess, probably, but they must be working up to a Young Avengers something.
I mean, why introduce all these children or kids of the Avengers and not add anything to it?
And they better crack on soon, because otherwise they're going to be about the age that the original Avengers
were. Yeah.
They don't do it soon. So, I mean, it might be a series, maybe. Maybe he's lying. Who knows?
We've got casting news. We found someone to play Michael Jackson in his new biopic. And this is going to be controversial because it's his nephew, Jafar, who is the son of Jermaine, who's been casted to play it. A very controversial role.
Yep.
This won't end well.
I don't think this is actually going to make cinemas. yeah. Nuts. Has he acted before?
I don't think so.
No, okay. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. is apparently going to be the beginning of a cinematic universe of horror spins on out-of-copyright children's stories. We also have Peter Pan's Neverland Nightmare and Bambi the Reckoning.
Because if there's anything that people want to see, is Bambi taking revenge on the hunter that killed his mum.
Yeah, I don't think any of this is going to happen. Cause I think they'll realise that people found the idea of the first one quite funny, but no one saw it, and then they'll cancel all this.
To be perfectly honest with you, I think Bambi and Peter Pan make better horror film ideas than Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, from what I've heard of the Winnie the Pooh one, it's just basically a guy in a bear mask and a guy in a pig mask. And I don't think there's much connection with the rest of it. But yes, you're probably right. Mm. You could retell Peter Pan as a horror thing quite easily.
Yes, yeah. Definitely true. Definitely true. What else? We've gone through this quite quickly. The last bit of news that I want to bring up is basically Viola Davis has achieved EGOT status.
Mm.
Not movie news, but only because she won it on the Grammy, so that doesn't really count as movie news.
Did she get a real Grammy, or was it one of these spoken word things?
Yeah, it's not a real Grammy.
Okay.
But it's Best Audiobook Narration and Storytelling Recording.
Well done, her. One of only, less than 20, isn't it?
Not many, yeah.
Yeah. Well, if we're doing not really movie news, here's another one. La La Land is being adapted as a Broadway musical.
I'm quite surprised that La La Land is going to be made into a musical before The Greatest Showman.
I mean, Greatest Showman's in the pipeline, isn't it?
Yeah, it should be, right?
I've read something about that, so I think I'm not sure which one's going to get there first. But bring it to England, I say. Because I'm not going to New York.
The dancing will probably be better than the film, though.
Probably, and the singing. and I've got a bunch of casting stuff. Let's say this very quickly. Evan Rachel Wood and Josh Gad are going to be in a murder mystery, The Adults, directed by
Alex Winter.
Yeah, everyone loves a murder mystery. Keke Palmer and Sacha Baron Cohen are going to be playing married 70s toy sales reps on a road trip. I didn't even write down the name of that film. Nope. I don't know if it's to be named. And interestingly, Emma Thompson is going to be in an action thriller called The Fisherwoman. Is she doing a Liam Neeson?
She makes interesting choices, though.
She Emma does. Thompson,
I would say. She's really, really trying to push the envelope on what she can do.
Yeah, good for her. She's done everything else, so why not an action thriller?
Go on, her.
We have quick time, Zijan, for your favourite segment, Things Colin Was Wrong About.
I always have time for this, Colin.
This is going back a little bit. But I said, I think in our year preview show, episode, that Alice Darling is Anna Kendrick's directorial debut. I was wrong, she's not directing it. But she is directing The Dating Game, which is her directorial debut this year. Hmm. I apologise. Simon got in touch with me to point out other things I've got wrong. I'm not sure this counts. So I said that Scarlett Johansson played English characters like in Girl with a Pearl Earring. He's pointed out that character was not English, but I'm saying she played her with an English accent. So it's close.
Right.
Also last week, or 2 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I referred to various celebrities like Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston backing the Oscar nomination for Andrea Riseborough. I don't think they did, but it's people like them, you know? Celebrities are online a lot.
People like them. Like people, basically.
You know, human beings. We move on from this segment. Maybe I'll store them all off again in the future. To see or not to Z, the segment where we tell you about films we've recently seen and tell you, the listener, whether you should see them or not, Z them. Zijan, what have you been watching?
I saw the film you saw last time, Ral. I saw After Sun on Mubi.
Oh, did you?
I got the 1 week trial and then properly removed, cancelled it straight away after I've seen the film. Because there's nothing else on this streaming channel. What is this streaming channel?
Well, I clicked to cancel, like, are you sure you can extend it to 30 days? Like, yeah, all right. I need to remember when that is. But only because I want to watch Reason to Leave, which is on there. Apparently that's good.
What else is on that, Colin?
That's like, it. It's just those two.
Really, nothing good on it. Like, what? Anyway, After Sun, as you mentioned last time around, this is Paul Mescal's claim for Oscar glory, hopefully. This is where he plays a young father battling depression while holidaying with his daughter. And yeah, I enjoyed it. I especially like the ending of this film. There's nothing much I can add to this which you haven't said already. I think the trailer is pretty self-explanatory of what's happening, what's going on. It's a coming of age film, and I think Paul Mescal is great in it. Not too sure whether it's Oscar quality, but I think it's still very good though.
Yeah, in fact, cause I didn't cover this into C or not to Z, but I did mention it last time, and I think, yeah, I basically agree with you.
Yeah, right.
Pretty much the same. I've been to the cinema to see a few things. Well, I've had one of these is a cinema, one of these is Netflix. I watched The Whale, Brendan Fraser's potential Oscar-winning performance. So he plays the main character, who is an incredibly obese guy who basically can't leave his, well, chooses not to leave his flat, I suppose, but can't move around well. It's based on a play of the same name. The film is almost entirely within that flat, and you see him being visited by his daughter, by
Kara,
yes, and by a guy, I guess a kind of a religious, a member of a church, I don't think it's a real church, who kind of knocking door to door to spread the word, and one or two other characters come in at times. Brendan Fraser's great in this. Sadly, I don't think he is going to win, and I don't think he really deserves to. I think Colin Farrell is better. It's a shame because I think we'd all love to see Brendan Fraser win an Oscar. But yeah, this shows this really fragile, hurt guy. He's obviously just had a lifetime of many, many years of pain. You could argue it's maybe not a very nuanced performance because you don't see that many layers to it. And I think my biggest complaint about any of this is there's one moment in the trailer where he gets really passionate and emotional as I just want to know that I've done one thing in my life that was worthwhile.
Yeah.
I really wish they hadn't put that in the trailer. I can see why they did, but it's kind of the only moment in the film where he really breaks and is emotional, and kind of the build up to it, you're sitting there thinking, oh, this is the trailer moment. It would have been better if you kind of, it came as a surprise, I think.
Ah, I get that.
Yeah, it reminds me a bit of Nightcrawler, where there's a famous scene that where Jake Gyllenhaal kind of smashes a mirror, and that was very much his kind of his character breaking and just being completely different, and that was in all the trailers, I think. Yeah, it'd be a shame. So, but yeah, it does feel a little bit stagey because it's all in one place and your character's kind of coming in and out. But I think that, whereas I often complain about that, I think that works here because it's all about showing how he is trapped and he can't get out and everything just comes to him. So yeah, it's a good film. It's a good performance. The supporting cast are good. Again, I don't think Hong Chao was going to win an Oscar, but it's nice to see her nominated. Definitely worth a watch. I also on Netflix saw Your Place or Mine, a romantic comedy starring Reese Witherspoon and Ashton Kutcher. It is not worth a watch. It's bad. It's barely even bad. It's just nothing. They switch places. So one of them lives in New York. The other one lives in Los Angeles. They switch houses for a bit. They barely share any screen time, and when they do, they have no chemistry whatsoever. It's a real shame because I'm really excited for kind of A-list romantic comedies again. But and Reese Witherspoon has done great romantic comedies in the past, but just neither of them seem to care. They're just going through the motions. The script is nothing. It's yeah. Just don't bother.
Yeah, good. Bother. Thanks.
We move on to top 10 films, beginning with Jay.
Oh, this is rough. Okay, I'm going to start off now by saying it's very obvious what my number one is because I knew what my number one is going in. Okay. It's just putting in everything else that's going to be it's going to be rough because I think I only got 9 as well.
You got 9?
I cannot put Justice League in number 10. I'm not going to put it there at all.
Fine. So just to explain what we always do, Zed and I do our top 10, or apparently top 9 in Zed's case. I had quite a few that were almost on the list, actually. That's interesting. We've also asked out to various friends and family who have on Facebook, and they have given us a list. So our films will be scored from 10 points to 1 point. Everyone else will be scored 1 point each, and we'll find the overall winner. Like you, I think my top 4 or 5 actually are all great films, I think, and then after that there was a bit of padding, but there was for the lower ranks there was someone that could easily have made it that didn't.
It's usually the case for us though, but I'm pretty sure 100% you can guess what my number 1 is as well. But yeah, let's not go there, let's not spoil the surprise.
Nothing is leaping to mind at the moment.
Oh really? Oh cool. That's good then.
Well, I'll do my number 10, shall I, if you haven't got one.
Yeah, I know.
So I thought about a Jurassic film. I thought about a few things here, but in the end I went for Julie and Julia, which is, I must admit, I think 10 was a bit difficult here because I don't love this film. I think it's good. Amy Adams plays a woman called Julie living, I think, in New York, if I remember rightly. And she decides to spend a year copying the recipes of Julia Child, as played by Meryl Streep. And you also see Meryl Streep as Julia Child, as kind of a dual narrative. It's based on two real life stories of Julia Child and also this woman who did a blog in the fairly early days of the internet. But it's not just kind of charting the recipes, you also kind of her reaction and the pressure of doing this and her relationship with her, I think her husband, as played by Chris Messina. They're two fantastic actresses of different generations. I think Meryl Streep was Oscar nominated because, of course, she was. I don't think she won.
No.
I think this is, if you're into food, it's probably better. I'm not a foodie by any means. Stanley Tucci is also really good in it. He plays Julia Child's husband. Definitely worth seeking out.
I have a number 10 now.
Okay.
I'm putting the Joy Luck Club in for number 10.
Oh, yes.
Only because this was the hallmark Asian American film back in the 90s. The only reason why I didn't want to put it in the first place was because I haven't seen the film for ages. I cannot remember for life of me what happened in the film. I know it's just like four Asian mothers and their four Asian American daughters, basically see how their lives play out in parallel.
San Francisco, is that right?
In San Francisco, yeah. It's a landmark film in a lot of ways because it was the first Asian, fully Asian American film, you know. And now you may think it's a bit weird, but it's only recently that Asian Americans or Asians in general get seen in cinema with like Crazy Rich Asians and Shang-Chi and Everything Everywhere All at Once. But before that, and this was only in the past 3 years, but before that, this was the only film that came out, and this is in the 90s. So,
and we're getting a sequel soon.
Yeah, they are.
Cool. Okay. Number 9 for me, and this is really more of a blast from the past because I loved this film when I was when I first saw it. Less so now. Is Johnny English, Rowan Atkinson playing the spy. I very much enjoyed it at the time. I've not seen it in a while. I suspect it probably doesn't hold up, but the madcap capers of Britain's finest export. I think this is probably more popular globally than it is here. Natalie Imbruglia is, I think we talked about having a brief return to her acting career and then giving up again. Well, I'm not giving up. I don't know what she did. Mm. But yeah, I would rank it as much worse than Blackadder. If I'm doing Rowan Atkinson's career,
I've still not seen Blackadder.
But yeah, I think Blackadder is quite different to his other stuff. It's probably better than Man vs. Bee.
But yeah, definitely. My number 9 is for you, Colin.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because I put Jerry Maguire here.
Oh, appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Now, I'm pretty sure he's high up on your list. It's going to be high up on your list as well. So I'm not going to talk about it because I cannot remember it. I know I watched it. And I know Tom Cruise is in it. And I know you like it a lot. So I put it in it. And I can still quote some of the lines as well because everyone knows the quotes from Jerry Maguire. So there you go. It's my number nine.
Give us the quotes, Sijun. Give us the quotes.
It's better than Justice League.
Is that a quote from the movie?
What? It's not me, it's you? Something like that. Something like that. Oh, show me the money.
Show me the money. I think you're going for You Complete Me.
That's right.
You Had Me at Hello.
Oh, yes, that too. Renee Zellweger when she was. Yeah, I got one though.
Yes, she did.
I got the best quote.
You got the best quote. And of course, both two of those quotes featured in The Heights, just to show that it's still popular. We will be coming on to that later. Next one for me is Junebug, which... again, might have been higher if I'd seen it more recently, but this was Amy Adams had been working quite a long time before this, but this really shot her into the A-list. I think it was her first Oscar nomination. She plays a character with the nickname Junebug, who's pregnant in the film. It's just a very sweet, lovely performance. Her and her boyfriend, as played by Ben Mendelsohn. Not Ben Mendelsohn. Ah. Who's the guy who's married to Marina Bracken-Packerin?
What? What's this? I'm not your tabloid newspaper.
Ben McKenzie, who played the lead in Gotham a bit later. When I made this list, I thought, I want to watch Junebug again. So I will probably watch it again before we next record. Maybe I'll feedback on what I remember about it when I've actually seen it once more. But really, really sweet film.
Mm-hmm. My number 8. Yes. I just put in Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
Nice.
Only because I enjoyed it when I watched it.
As good a reason as any.
Exactly. We've spoken about this before. We've spoken about a sequel in... Was it a proper review that we did a sequel in?
I think we might have, actually, yeah.
I think so. There was a time when there wasn't much films coming out, if I'm not mistaken. But I think the first iteration of it, Welcome to the Jungle, was more successful than the sequel. It's The Rock playing The Rock in khaki, but it's more fun because he can play a teenager playing The Rock. So it gives more range to his character.
Playing against type, kind of, because he looks like he always looks like, but playing a guy who's a nerd and all this. I really like this film. This is going to be higher up my list. I quite like the original Jumanji when I was growing up. And this, I think, just takes the ideas and makes it a better film, and I think it should be studied as the way to reboot properties because it wasn't like too adhering to the original ideas, but it kind of paid them just respect, came out with a kind of new twist on it, and just did it really, really well. Great cast.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
And I agree. Well, the next one, Next Level, It was fine, but not as good. They'll be still making these, I expect. So let's hope they get back to form. My next one, number 7, is maybe my most controversial choice, because it's Jack Ryan's Shadow Recruit.
What?
My favourite Jack Ryan film. I think everyone else's least favourite Jack Ryan film. It was Chris Pine playing the titular role, Keira Knightley, Kenneth Branagh, and I thought it was really good, and no one else does. But everyone knows who Jack Ryan is. He's a government agent, well, kind of government analyst turned field agent. I thought they just really nailed it. I am alone in thinking that.
I've still not seen any Jack Ryan film, so I cannot dispute
this. Yeah, because Harrison Ford, Alec Baldwin, Ben Affleck have all given it a try. Obviously now John Krasinski on Amazon Prime. And I don't really... I mean, I like them all enough. I've seen them all. We talked about this last time. But I think none of them work as well as this one. So, Well, maybe Hunt for Red October.
Yeah, I would know this. My number 7 is Julie and Julia. So, what you mentioned before. And probably I like this a lot more because I like food.
There you go. That's three places for liking the food.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you're correct in the sense that, yeah, you like this if you like food-related stuff and food-related Netflix shows, which I do adore. That's why I like The Menu as well.
There you go.
Yeah. So.
The Christmas scene is great. You should do more stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
Next one for me is Journey's End, which is based on the play by R.C. Sheriff, I think. It came out 3 years ago, maybe. It's based in the First World War. It's based on a play, and again, has kind of mostly just set in one location in the trenches of First World War, which is not dissimilar to the film we might be talking about if we get time today. Mm-hmm. It's Paul Bettany is in it, and I think it was I at the time noted that he was in 3 films that year and died 4 times. This is one of the ones he died in. Asa Butterfield's really good in it as the lead. It kind of does a great job of showing the kind of claustrophobia and horror of the First World War. So worth checking out.
Nice. My number 6 is Jaws.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jaws. What more can I say about Jaws that people do not know already about it? But I think my appreciation for Jaws became a lot more after I saw the play in the West End recently called The Shark is Broken.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, where they showed the 3 cast members. Basically, it was played by the son of Robert Shaw, I think. They basically showed the behind the scenes of what happened in the filming of the movie, because as we all know, the shark, the mechanical shark, was broken more often than not in the film. So the 3 actors had a lot of time for themselves, basically. So I think watching that gave me a lot more insight in the movie making of Jaws, and it was really good. I think, like, I don't think I appreciated Jaws as much when I watched it, because I think graphics have, you know, changed a lot
since
it came out in the 1980s. But I can still appreciate, like, the deep bass note of of trepidation and terror in the sea. So, yeah, there you go.
Just in case anyone was upset by that, Jaws came out in 1975, Zijan.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so old.
Jaws isn't on my list. I think I probably feel similar to you in that it's obviously a landmark or watermark film, kind of really invented the blockbuster, basically. But maybe has lost some of its power over the years, or maybe I just came to it the wrong time. I don't know. But yeah, it's not on my list. Next one for me is Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, which you've already covered. So back to you.
My next one, number 5, is the original Jumanji.
Oh, yeah.
Which I do have a soft spot for, partially because I love board games. And I love rhyming as well.
You love rhyming?
I do like the rhyming. I think it's quite clever for some reason. Like, I find it very clever when they're trying to solve a clue based on the rhyme.
When you meet friends, you're like, what are you interested in? Board games? Rhyming?
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
Right. No, but there's something about it. I think it's a lot of nostalgia clouding my judgment here, but...
that's fun.
Yeah, it's... I grew up watching the original Jumanji, even though there are bits which are pretty terrifying for a child to watch. But it's Robin Williams, you know. Robin Williams is in it, and he's larger than life. And I think Robin Williams made this film.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a young Kirsten Dunst.
And very young Kirsten Dunst.
Bonnie Hunt, I think.
Yeah, Bonnie Hunt.
It's not on my list, but it is.
I have a soft spot for it.
I used to love the TV series, cartoon TV series. Fourth on my list is Joker, a recent film that you all know about. Joaquin Phoenix won an Oscar for it. I think it was a really great take, basically, what if Scorsese did Batman? I know Scorsese wasn't involved in the end, having been linked for some time as potentially a producer, but he didn't do that. But I feel that there's been a slight backlash to this, but I'm not really sure why. I think it's just a really great take. I'm looking forward to what they do in Joker 2.
My number four is Joker as well.
Nice. There you go. Ooh, it's going to push it up the rankings.
Yep.
In which case, number three for me is Juno, which I've not seen for a while. I really loved this at the time. Watched it several times. Diablo Cody, I think, might have won an Oscar for writing this. Just really funny, whip-smart dialogue, great characters.
What a cast, though. Like, honestly, like, they got J.K. Simmons, Allison Janney, Jason Bateman, Jennifer Garner, Michael Cera. I think Elliot Page was the only unknown back then. But still, what a cast.
Great cast. Yeah. And yes, they all got it. They all got the vibe. I should watch that again. That's a great movie.
Me too. I should definitely watch it again.
Great soundtrack as well.
Yeah, I see like a part where Juno was just telling her parents that she was pregnant and her parents' reaction. I still love that scene so much.
I quite often think of J.K. Simmons' line is tore up from the floor up. I think about that quite a lot. And good kind of, I wouldn't say exactly twist, but kind of the way that you see the characters kind of evolves as the movie goes on. Because Jason Bateman is, she originally sees him as this like really cool guy, and then realizes actually he just hasn't grown up, and Jennifer Garner's the one who takes real responsibility.
Yeah. I think that's great. That's why Juno's my number three too.
There you go. Oh, okay. We have a surprisingly similar list at the top. Well, it's going to change soon. The second one for me, it is Jerry Maguire. Such a great film. Such a great film. You talked about some of the famous quotes, like "It's not you, it's me."
I'm pretty sure that was in there somewhere.
Tom Cruise, Oscar nomination, Cuba Gooding Jr. won an Oscar. Cameron Crowe has never been better as a writer director. It's an absolute classic, great rom com as well as anything else. But it's not just that; it's great kind of character development of the Jerry Maguire character and seeing how his views change over time. This is just a solid gold classic. Fun fact: my brother doesn't like it. Another fun fact, at university, I think I told my friend Anthony what a great film it was. And one time when I was out, he went through my DVD collection to borrow it and watch it, and accidentally watched A Night in the Life of Jimmy Reardon instead, which is a bad film. But Matthew Perry's film debut. So there you go. Apologies to Anthony for not being clear enough. Actually, that's not my fault. Anyway, great film. Number two.
My number two is The Jungle Book.
Which one?
1967 one.
Of course.
Yeah, the classic Walt Disney classic. I think this was the last film that Walt Disney himself actually worked on before his passing.
Was it?
Okay. Yeah, based on Rudyard Kipling's 1894 book of the same title, the 19th Disney animated feature film. Yeah, with very, very good songs that you can still remember, like Bare Necessities.
Mm-hmm.
And with a very, very vicious villain like Shere Khan.
Mm.
I think it's a great film. And I do miss hand-drawn animation, though.
Mm.
And Disney was so good back then. And now we get Toy Story 5.
Yeah, it's many, many years since I saw the original Jungle Book. I think when the CGI version came out, it was discussed that there wasn't really much of a plot in the first one, which maybe is fair, but two great songs, probably others, can't think of them, but that's enough, isn't it? Two world-beating songs is more than most films have. I still don't know what your number one's going to be. I'm probably going to kick myself when you say it. Anyway, for me, number one, Just Like Heaven. I adore this film. It might be the film that I've seen more than any other, actually. It's Reese Witherspoon, Mark Ruffalo, romantic comedy, high concept. He moves into an apartment in San Francisco where her ghostly apparition appears, and she doesn't know what's going on. She's like, what are you doing in my flat? And he's like, you're dead. And she's like, no, I'm not. And they're such a great couple. When I talked about Reese Witherspoon having made great rom-coms in the past, I was principally thinking of this.
And only this.
Is Legally Blonde a rom-com?
Yeah, maybe. Not really.
Okay, it's just this. This is the only good... Reese Witherspoon must have made more than one good rom-com, right?
She did... Was it Four Christmases?
Yeah, apparently that was terrible.
Vince Vaughn, yeah.
Yeah, none spring immediately to mind, but I'm sure she has. Check this film out. It didn't do brilliantly well. I think two possible reasons it didn't do brilliantly well. It might have been it was overshadowed by her Oscar-winning performance in Walk the Line that same year. Mm-hmm. It could be it's not actually good. I think it's the first. I think it's fantastic. Others might not agree with me.
It's on Netflix, I think, right?
It is on Netflix. Go and watch it.
Yeah, I should one day. Number one, Colin.
Watch it before next time, DJ, and then we can talk about it.
My number one.
Oh yeah.
Is I can't believe you don't know this. Is Jurassic Park.
See, I thought it might be, but I didn't know you were a big fan of Jurassic Park.
Yeah, because this was my first cinema memory.
Right, ever. Okay.
Like, this was the first film my parents brought me into the cinema to watch. It's the first film that made me fall in love with cinema and movies in general. So, I mean, I cannot put this at number one. It's a film that got me to love everything there is about filmmaking and everything. It's just wonderful. I don't think it's a great film to bring someone who was 8 years old at the time when it came out, because it's horrifying.
Yeah,
especially when the velociraptors were chasing the children down the kitchen. I mean, come on. I don't know why my parents were thinking then. I'm pretty sure they wanted to watch it more than I did. But
yeah, I almost put this in at 10. I almost put Jurassic World in at 10, actually, which I think is a really great reboot. But I just didn't see this as a kid. I didn't see this till I was maybe 16 or something.
The first movie, it was just incredible. Like, I grew up loving dinosaurs, as a lot of kids do. Mm.
Did kids love dinosaurs before this film?
I did like dinosaurs before the film, for sure. Okay. Yeah. And to see, like, you know, when Alan pulls in on the jeep and sees the long neck walking down?
Mm.
That's amazing, you know, like, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame that the Jurassic franchise has just gone batshit crazy. but the original still has a special place in my heart.
Yeah,
so.
No, it has gone off the rails. And yeah, I mean, I think if I'd seen this as a kid, it would be in my list as well. But yeah, or inspiring stuff. Right, let's go through some of the submissions from our listeners. They're not huge numbers this time. Emma has said Jaws. Simon has gone for all three Jumanji films. He's missed out Zathura, but doesn't begin with J, and he's not seen it, and I guess probably hasn't heard of it, but I could be wrong. Also Junebug. In fact, it's Simon who introduced me to Junebug, and Juno. Charlie has gone for Jerry Maguire, Jason and the Argonauts, which I imagine will be the old one with the Harryhausen stop motion, which again was for the time a huge development, like leap forward in technology, and Jurassic Park. Roz has gone for Junior,
isn't that the Arnold Schwarzenegger film?
Yes, pregnant Arnold Schwarzenegger with Emma Thompson. Now I'm think of it. Now I don't know if Roz listens to this actually, but she's gone for all three Johnny English films, which is insane because the second one is garbage and the third one apparently is even worse. But there you go. I shouldn't put down her choices. Thank you, Roz. Darren has gone for The Jungle Book. I'm going to assume it's the original because he didn't say. And Jackie Brown, Quentin Tarantino. Katie has gone for John Wick, the first one at least. Sorted that. Jack's gone for Johnny Mnemonic. Have you seen Johnny Mnemonic?
Nope.
No, neither have I. I feel this might be good. Tim has gone for The Judge, Robert Duvall and Robert Downey Jr. Which, yeah, is a pretty good film. I remember at the time, maybe my expectations were a little too high because it was talked about.
Yeah, of course you didn't like it. I thought.
Yeah, I think I was expecting it to be kind of like Oscar worthy, and it was just okay for me. Nathan has gone for Joker. Phil has gone for Jojo Rabbit. which I'm surprised not to see more of, actually, on this list. I didn't like it myself, but it was very popular.
I've not seen it.
James has gone for Jaws. Peter, someone I've never met, but is the crossword editor of the Sunday Times, and we're Facebook friends, has gone for Jaws on the basis that he plays, I think he said the bass trombone, whatever instrument it is that plays that music.
Yeah.
Rob has gone for the original Jungle Book. Judy has gone for the film Judy.
Yeah, I've seen that film, and it's okay. I think Renee Zellweger is the best bit of it. Obviously, she won an Oscar for it, but yeah.
Marky has gone for Jesus of Nazareth. He is my minister at church, so he should do. I don't know that one, but there have been many, I'm sure. Fernando, who has said that J is a great letter to go for, has gone for Jurassic Park, John Wick, Joker, Juno, Jumanji, and Johnny English. And Dave has gone for Jingle All the Way, another Arnold comedy.
Classic Christmas film.
But let's see what that does to our top 10. In joint 10th, we have Julie and Julia and Journey's End. In joint 8th, we have Jaws and Jumanji. I'm really holding those back because we had a lot of votes. Jaws would have won our listeners' votes. Maybe if I'd seen Jaws more recently, I would have put it in the list. In joint 6th, we have Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, and Just Like Heaven, criminally ignored by everyone else. In joint 5th, we have The Jungle Book, which again, I'm assuming is the original from all the votes we've had.
Yep.
In joint 3rd, and again, I'm holding it back here, it's Jurassic Park. And
disappointing.
Yeah. Jerry Maguire and our top two all had votes from you, me, and our listeners. It's a bit of a leap then. In second place, 16 points for Joker. But the number one film, beginning with that's J, it got 8 points from you, it got 8 points from me, and it got 2 points from our listeners. It's Juno.
Very good film.
Well done, Juno. I feel that people in general have moved on from forgotten Juno, so bring it back. Mm. Bring it back. Interestingly, Zizan, you only had... No, you didn't.
What?
Oh, sorry. You only had one film that wasn't either picked by me or by one of our listeners.
Yeah.
That's quite unusual. And it was reluctantly that it was the Joy Luck Club. That,
yes.
threw in at the end. just to give something a point. There you go. Always a good time. Do we have time to... Yes, I think we probably do have time to talk about this. All Quiet on the Western Front. Go for it, Zizan.
This, not to be confused with the one that came out recently, is the 1930 American, I emphasize American, even though it's set by in Germany and are supposed to be Germans, American epic anti-war film based on the 1929 novel of the same name. Wow, they really did make films very quickly.
Was it only 1929?
Yeah. directed by Louis Milestone, it stars quite a bunch of people that I really do not know at all. It's the first Best Picture winner based on a novel. I think the Oscars only came out like a couple of years before this, so of course. It was also the first to win for both production and Best Director. And yeah, that's it. It's basically an anti-war film. I've read the book before.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, it's a wonderful book about the horrors of war and the loss of innocence, as most war books and films are about, really. And yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that's interesting because I you say most war books and films aren't. I think you're probably right, but I've not looked into it, but I feel that this film has made a measurable impact in the way that people looked at the First World War. Yeah. Obviously the book as well, but I think the film probably reached more people at least in the English speaking world, in America particularly, I suppose, because I get the thing, a lot of kind of the talk about the First World War would have been about the heroism and the victory, and this is really saying look how terrible
war
is in general, and this war in particular.
I mean, the book is really about that, to be fair, so it is following the book quite closely. I think for a movie of its time, it's actually really well done. A lot of the effects I was quite impressed by. I was like, wow. I mean, this was in 1930.
Yeah, and these huge kind of like vistas of people running across no man's land and explosions. Yeah.
It's really incredible. The shots there are like, we come from watching the most recent World War I film I saw was 1917. Mm. And that was like a few years ago. And obviously that was incredible. This were all done in one shot, etc. But I think this holds up pretty good considering all things considered. It's like,
I think you're right. I think because like if someone today made a film about the First World War that was just about look how great war is and look how we beat them, it would be insane. That would never happen. 1917, I guess, is not, there is suffering in it, but it's not about the suffering really. No. But I think this is things like Journey's End I mentioned, and I know it's not First World War, but something like Hacksaw Ridge, Blackadder, Blackadder Goes Forth, is obviously from a comic point of view, but still kind of saying how awful the First World War was, and I think maybe some of the impact of that in this is lessened a bit because it's at the time what would have been unusual and shocking is just what happens in war films.
Yeah,
but,
basically.
But still, I think it gets across really well, and you see these boys. I mean, they literally the first scene you see them signing up out of school,
bright eyed and so eager. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
It is. And I think it's incredible, as you say, it's a German book, and the characters are German. They're all played as by Americans. I suppose they're supposed to be German, but they're all with American accents, and not a lot of care, I think, was taken to make them anything other than American characters.
For
but,
sure.
But it's amazing, really, that only a dozen years after the war, they were playing the enemy, but kind of as protagonists, as real, like people who go through real pain and you, it's quite incredible, really, at the time.
Yeah, I would say that. I think my only nitpicking point is that I wish there was more focus on the protagonist in the middle of the film.
Mm.
I know you focus on it at the end, but like all of the people there suddenly blurred into one. Maybe that's the point of it. You know, like they are all nameless faces in the end. But I wish there was more focus in the middle because I couldn't identify who the main character was and why. Yeah, basically, until the end.
I was the same as you. I it felt very much it was just here's a bunch of random, well not random, but here's a bunch of people who are the same. And yeah, maybe that was deliberate. I've not yet watched the Netflix version that came out last year, which I think is in German and has got lots of Oscar nominations. But I'll try and get to that before too long. But yeah, this is for film. I say like I agree with you. I'm kind of amazed that a film that's getting on for 100 years old is still. Still very worth watching. And the good news is if you watch the version on Amazon, it's 20 minutes shorter than the original version because the restoration, I guess.
I have no idea which version I watched.
I think the only version that is available is the restoration.
Oh, okay. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Presumably because the film was just not salvageable rather than anything else. I don't know. Next time, it's Actor Factor. And I'm a little surprised we've not done him before, but I did check. It's going to be Woody Harrelson.
Okay. Cool.
We move on then to the quiz, which this time is on the everyone's favourite franchise, the Sing franchise.
You've seen one more film of this than I have, Colin, so please, with a sarcasm.
I'm surprised you've not seen any Sing films.
No, I have not.
Anyway, kick us off.
Question one. What animal is Eddie Noodleman, who is voiced by John C. Reilly?
He's a sheep.
He is a sheep.
Yeah, I did my research.
I haven't.
All right. In which case, what was the name of the original song that you two performed for Sing 2?
For Sing 2? Where the streets have no name.
I said original song.
Is that original?
I mean, it was original when they did it in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
Your song saved my life.
Question two is, you've guessed already, which real-life singer voiced Clay Calloway in song?
That was Bono.
Sing two, yeah.
Yeah.
That is Bono.
Who voices the LD Iguana, Miss Crawley?
I'm going to go on a limb and guess, Edgar Wright, just because.
Ooh, I know he's in it. Close. It's Garth Jennings, the director of the movie.
Ah, nice. Question three. Which Elton John song did Johnny voice by Taron Egerton audition with?
This is actually not based on research. This is based on remembering the film.
Yes.
And I think it's I'm Still Standing.
There you go. You see, I know you watched the film for a reason.
I was on a plane. What is the name of the fictional city or maybe state, no one seems to know, where both films are set?
Oh, is there one? Oh, no.
Did you hear any research?
I thought you wouldn't do any research on animated films, Colin. Why would you?
I want to win this year, Zayden.
Zootropolis. It's another product by a different company altogether.
That's amazing. That's right. No, it's Calatonia.
Question four. Jennifer Saunders voiced Nana Noodleman, but which other Jennifer provided her singing voice?
Jennifer Hudson.
That's correct.
What kind of animal is Mina?
You must have given who voiced them.
I don't know who voiced them.
What? Does it work? What kind of animal is Mina? Is it in both sings?
I think so.
Was it in the first sing or the second sing then?
I think both.
It's not helpful.
I'm not trying to be helpful. You've already lost. I don't want to worry.
That's why you're having me helpful now.
I can look it up if you want, but it's difficult for me to do that without cheating by looking up.
Oh, fine. Stuff. Johnny is a gorilla. Ash is a porcupine. One's a pig. It's a rat.
Yes, no, definitely was in both of them, actually. Definitely was. Now I think about it. Yeah.
I'll go with an elephant.
Correct. Wow.
Yes.
Very good. Who was nominated twice for Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Favorite Voice from an Animated Movie, but lost both times, including to a co-star from Sing 2?
That's Reese Witherspoon.
That is Reese Witherspoon. I think I just asked you two questions in a row there for some reason.
You have, but you already guessed this one. You already answered this one as well.
Okay.
Who won it?
Who won it? Scarlett Johansson.
Yes.
Full marks for me. And that's the first time I've ever done questions in the wrong order, though.
This is clear. Also, you weren't being sarcastic then. This is your favorite movie series of all time.
It's been revealed. I really want to win the quiz this year, Susan. Next time, we are quizzing on the films of Craig Gillespie.
Ah, nice.
And Zijan, last time I asked you what was going to be happening, and you got it wrong, and you asked me to cut it out, but I couldn't cut around it, so I left it in, so everyone knows you got it wrong last time. what is our main topic for next time?
Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania.
Correct, full marks. We will see you then.
Bye.